I am here with Dr. Volker Tork, Director of International Protection in the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, widely known by its acronym UNHCR. Volker, thanks for being with us on the Global Observatory today. Can you first bring us up to date on the state of forced displacement worldwide, both within national borders and across borders?
Well, the last couple of years have seen a massive increase in both internal as well as external displacement, mostly as a result of conflict and violence. The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center has just published its report, and they have, for instance, reported over 33 million people internally displaced as a result of conflict. We haven't yet been able to issue our statistics, but the number will be certainly very high in terms of refugees. I think we will be looking at a number of 11, at least 11 million refugees. Obviously, the Syria conflict is the one that produces most of the refugees these days. We have already now 2.7 million Syrian refugees in the neighboring countries.
Is there a general tendency, increase or growth of the number of refugees or displaced people? And if yes, do you see this tendency to remain the same in the years to come with the combination of climate change, urban changes, and so on and so forth?
Over the last 3 years, we have seen a steady increase, and it is clearly due to the fact that we have seen a number of conflicts emerge over the last 3 years. If you just look back, we had Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, Somalia, we had then Libya, with the influx both into Egypt as well as Tunisia, Syria, Yemen, now South Sudan, and the Central African Republic. But with the older conflicts like Afghanistan, Iraq, and also Somalia, not yet resolved. Myanmar plus Colombia. So you have a combination of factors, new and old conflicts producing or continuing to produce refugees, while old crisis not being resolved, which makes it extremely difficult in terms of numbers. In fact, that's the indication and that's the reason behind the growing numbers of refugees and internally displaced as a result of violence.
Most people are aware of the role of the UNHCR in providing emergency relief assistance in humanitarian crises, illustrated by, for instance, the emblematic UNHCR tents. But the protection role of your institution is arguably well less known. So what is the UNHCR doing to ensure the protection of refugees and displaced people in crises, but also not only in crises, but in host countries?
UNHCR's international protection role goes back to its foundation in 1951, and it's actually the core of our existence, if you like. We do all kinds of things. We, for instance, go in front of a court in order to provide what we call an amicus curiae brief to the highest courts of the countries. It means that we would go into detention centers and have access to refugees and asylum seekers. It means that we would advise governments on laws, on decrees. We would actually actively resettle people. We would register them. We would document them. So there's a whole range of protection activities that we conduct, also in relation, for instance, to responding to sexual and gender-based violence incidents, child protection activities, activities for people with special needs. I mean, there's a whole broad range of activities that we are undertaking for refugees, for stateless people, as well as for the internally displaced. So that's our signature dish. It's the protection culture, the type of protection activities that we conduct, but also to ensure that the humanitarian response, the relief response, is informed by protection considerations. And I give you an example. It means, for instance, that if camp layout needs to be looked at from a protection perspective, because if you are not careful about the camp layout, you may inadvertently contribute to instances of gender discrimination or things like that.
You recently visited Syria, the Central African Republic, and South Sudan, certainly the most troubled hotspots on the planet today. So what do these crises have in common, in your view, in terms of protection response? And do they present similar challenges for the UNHCR?
I think these crises have essentially three things in common. First, they have an incredibly terrible impact, horrific impact on civilians. The number of deaths of civilians is extremely high. I mean, there is an estimate for the Syrian crisis that ranges over 100,000 to 150,000. The same for South Sudan, very high toll of civilians that die. The same for the Central African Republic. So civilians bear the brunt of these violent conflicts. The second aspect is that displacement is a feature of all of them, both internal displacement and external displacement and multiple displacement. I think all refugees have gone through an existence of an internally displaced for quite some time. So we are not talking about one displacement phenomenon or feature. We are talking here about multiple displacements happening both internally first and then externally. And it really tests the resilience of people. It increases their vulnerability and has a terrible impact on their capabilities to get on with their lives. So displacement is a huge feature of it. We see that in the numbers that I described earlier. The third thing is that we are talking here, when we look at the causes of the conflicts and of the displacement, about persecution on account of religion, political opinion, some ethnicity. We talk here about serious systematic human rights violations. We talk here about the fundamental disregard for international humanitarian law, which is the essence of refugee protection. So if someone flees circumstances of this kind, obviously the person fulfills squarely the criteria of the Refugee Convention definition. And I think it's important to recognize this.
In the Central African Republic in particular, the humanitarian community, including the UNHCR, has recently faced quite some important dilemma, in particular in relation to the relocation of some communities. I'm thinking about here some Muslim communities that were directly threatened, kind of besieged by hostile groups. And UNHCR, with other actors, helped to relocate those people to other parts of the country, triggering criticisms by some quarters that it is about facilitating ethnic cleansing and de facto partition of the country. What is your take on this dilemma?
The relocation of communities at risk was and continues to be a life-saving measure of last resort. If we are confronted with a situation where the only choice for people to save their lives is to be relocated elsewhere because it's what they want, and because there is no sustainable security presence that can be provided by other actors, and in the absence of the state, then we do not have much choice but to help people to relocate, because that's what they want, and otherwise they would be massacred. So for us, the humanitarian imperative to save lives prevails over any other imperative. If the international community is not able to put in place the structures that are required to ensure that communities are not behaving in the way that they are behaving now in the Central African Republic, then there isn't much choice that we as humanitarians have in these circumstances.
Moving to Syria now, you mentioned before the sheer number of people displaced in this context. We are talking about nearly 10 million people maybe displaced, including close to 3 million in neighboring countries, 6.5 million, it is probably an underestimation, within the country itself. And the neighboring countries obviously have shown an enormous amount of generosity, but are under increasing strain and are carrying this burden, maybe not alone, but they feel so. So what is your feeling about the need for solidarity and burden sharing, indeed? And is the current international climate conducive to such solidarity by the international community?
The strain and the burden that the neighboring countries face as a result of the refugee crisis is enormous. And we are talking here, just think of Lebanon. Lebanon is a country of 4.5 million people. You have suddenly an additional 1 million people in a country that is already suffering from a lack of resources, where the infrastructure is not necessarily equipped to deal with an additional influx of a million people. That's, I mean, one in every four people is a refugee. That is enormous for a country to cope with. So it is absolutely clear that under these circumstances, and the same goes for Jordan, the same goes for Turkey, the same goes also for northern Iraq, I mean, where we have about 230,000 refugees from Syria who fled there, same goes for Egypt. It's clear that these countries require international support to be able to continue hosting refugees under these circumstances. And there is of the necessary humanitarian response, and we are obviously providing that. But there is also the longer-term response that is required, which would help these countries on the development side, on the infrastructural side, to make sure that their education systems, their health systems, their water management systems, even their waste management systems are equipped to deal with populations, with massive new populations. And I'm afraid that there we still need a lot of work on the part of the international community. We have very good cooperation with the World Bank, with UNDP, but we need more engagement of donors to ensure that that response is also forthcoming on the development side.
And do you feel that resettlement in third countries, particularly in European countries, maybe in North America, is an option that should be further looked into?
Absolutely. Resettlement and humanitarian admission is an important sign of solidarity with the host countries. Our aim is to resettle about 30,000 in the course of this year, Syrian refugees. We hope that over the next 2 years, that is 2015-2016, that we will be able to see about 100,000 people be resettled in third countries. Of course, these are small numbers in comparison, but nonetheless, if the most vulnerable refugees benefit from such programs, they obviously have a better future. And it's also an important sign of solidarity with the host countries to engage in resettlement and humanitarian admission.
You hinted to the fact before that the bulk of people displaced are in situation of protracted displacement. For that matter, the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center that you mentioned before has put forward the fact that internal displaced people will spend, in average, 17 years in this situation of displacement. So, besides resettlement in the case of Syrian refugees, what are the other durable solutions to address this issue of protracted displacement?
The protracted displacement, as you say, is one of the big challenges. We will need collectively to work more creatively on solutions, especially in those situations where prolonged displacement has occurred over 5 years. And it's, I would say, over 5 years is prolonged displacement. Some of the solutions lie in, for instance, finding ways and means to locally settle where people are. Because if people have been in exile for over 10, 15 years, 17 years, it will be very difficult for them to reconnect under certain circumstances, especially if the conflict continues or if the conditions are not there for them to go back. In these circumstances, it will be important to reorient the whole effort towards ensuring that people can probably settle where they are. But sometimes this requires political decisions by governments to accept people. We have very good experience, especially in the industrialized world, where if you are recognized as a refugee, you basically end up living there for the rest of your lives. In some of the developing world, it is more of an issue. But there have also been some innovative approaches through labor migration schemes in some instances, or by tolerating, in effect, the presence of refugees and letting them get on with their lives where they are. But this type of approaches will need to be reinvigorated. There needs to be a real push towards solutions. And some of it can be done by us. A lot of it will have to be done by other actors, including by political actors, to find the political will for a stronger solution towards displaced communities.
Volker, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.